So welcome everyone to the Joint Credentials Community Group and Data Verification Community Group. The agenda I just put into the text chat. Basically, we're going to review our agendas and do a quick intro, some announcements, and then we're going to dive into the heart of our discussions today, which is to talk about selective disclosure, data minimization, especially from the context of Jan Komenich and his team and their work. Do we have any agenda item changes or things we need to worry about right now? I'm not hearing anything. So for introductions, we have a few new people. Jan will introduce himself maybe at the beginning of his section, but what other new people do we have besides Jan that have not been to one of our meetings for a while or recently or at all?
Hey, this is Moses. I wanted to introduce Ruta, who works with me. She's an expert in AI, and I'll let her introduce herself. But basically what I was thinking about is, would it be possible to put some sort of AI or machine learning cookie into a verifiable claim that connects it to other things to make it possible to do better machine learning over the system? So that's just a thought, and I don't know what Ruta will say about that. Okay?
Okay, thank you. What else? Who else is new? Okay. Glenn, are you up for being our reintroduced today to say a little bit what brought you into the community and what you do and what you're passionate about?
Sure. Thanks. Yeah, this is my second or third time through the group, and I'm based in Seattle. I'm working with a local blockchain company, and they're building a new blockchain platform as well as looking at applications like identity and authentication using the blockchain. So that's my interest. I'm following Solidity, and by that I mean I'm learning that specification, and that's how I wound up here at the Verifiable Claims. I am interested if there's any preliminary thoughts of how the specification might go. I haven't found anything yet, so if anybody could point me to potential designs that I could pattern my thinking and research on, that'd be great.
Okay, thank you. So we have a request from Manu. Ruta, can you tell us a little bit about yourself?
Sure. So my background is in artificial intelligence. I'm a professor at Northeastern University, and I run a small tech company called Tikeri for AI solutions. And Moses invited me to this meeting so that we could discuss and explore some kind of synergy between AI and blockchain.
Okay, thank you. So moving on, a quick review of our status items. There is a poll on priorities for work items. It is technically due next week, or actually 7th of July. So that is here. Please. That's interesting. That's the poll for the work items, and that's the link for the work items. Second thing is We are in discussion about renaming the group. We want to resolve that in early July if possible. Here is the link to some of the naming discussions. We have to approve a new name and mission statement in July. There's a draft of a possible mission statement, but it's really preliminary because we haven't really decided or finalized on the name. But you know, these are all important action items we have here for the group. And that's it as far as current action items. Am I missing any action items for the whole group as a whole? Okay. Going on to announcements, there will be no meeting next week. It's July 4th, United States, which is a holiday, so we're not going to be having a meeting due to the number of people from the U.S. Our next meeting will be July 11th, and we're really hoping to close on a formal proposal for the name of the group, and you know, begin to really kind of focus on mission. Wrap that up and choose our first couple of work items from our poll. Okay. The next announcement is that we're planning a remote hackathon on the week of July 10th for those people who are interested in the DID BTCR method. If anybody's interested, contact Kim or myself if you'd like to participate. It is a BTC kind of minimum viable product for demonstrating a DID method that, you know, we can go live with some demos this, you know, next month. That's it for our announcements. Does anybody else have any important announcements? Okay, so we're going to move on to the meat of our work, which is we're going to be talking about selective disclosure, identity mixture, CL signatures, et cetera. I first want to talk about what the items are. So they're high on the poll so far of potential work items, of which there is no current draft. Is this data minimization and selective disclosure report. My idea on that is there's been a lot of confusion in this community around some of the terminology. I've heard a number of things called selective disclosure that the cryptographers would say, no, that's not, that's data minimization, et cetera. There's also a variety of different ways of doing selective disclosure and some principles. So I think that you know, defining what those are and sharing sort of you know, some of the best context on that would be useful here. And then begin to define, you know, why is this important and what are our requirements for any kind of data minimization, selective disclosure work in the credentials community. There are two particular proposals on the table regarding this. So an example of data minimization is this redaction linked data specification. Basic idea here is that the you know, we want to do a Merkle proof of each individual item in a graph, so that any particular item from the graph can be removed and the signature is still valid, so i.e. you can redact it. More specific, which will lead into the discussion with Jan in a minute, is this pseudonymous signature suite, which adds to the linked data signatures the ability to use the Comanish. I can never say it. CL signatures is what we always say in short, which I'm hoping that Jan can talk a bit about more. And that was proposed by Evernim and Manus Torney as an early draft of what that might look like. Obviously, we have a lot of work to do. So that's why we're having this discussion today. We're going to begin the discussion. Jan has some slides. They are at here. So Jan, go ahead and take on the table, introduce yourself and any of your team members, if there are any others that are here today, and tell us about your tech.
Sure. Thanks very much. So I've been working with IBM since, I guess, 19 years now, and I've been working on cryptography or cryptography to protect privacy online since many more years. So it starts with basic cryptographic algorithms like signature schemes, better signature scheme, encryption schemes, and so on. But then we've also ran a couple of projects like Prime, Prime Live, ABC for Trust, that were European Union funded projects with a large number of partners from different industries, from universities. I've led most of them as a technical leader as well, and the goal was essentially to take the basic crypto algorithms and just make sure that we could make them usable in practice. So we would also define policy languages for those that could use those signature schemes, those encryption schemes. Essentially, we're building a full middle layer stack and opt to like prototypical applications or pilots. Actually, we've done a number of pilots. So, for instance, one in a Greek school where students were given smart cards with attribute-based credentials or anonymous credentials on them, and so they could go to course, and then at the end of the course, they would get a fresh credential, and at the end of the semester, they would be able to go online, prove that they had taken sufficiently many courses without revealing their identities, and then be able to grade the course without having to fear that their professors would give them bad grades later on in the exam because they didn't like the course or that they did give some critiques. Right, so I guess that's sort of the background here. We're still involved in many of those things. We were still doing a lot of work on the crypto, on the policy languages as well. I mean, we're doing just recently helped the TCG to update their TPM specifications, which in some senses is like a subset, because also the TPM has to prove anonymously that it has certain properties without these proofs being linkable. So we're still working on that. We're involved in blockchain membership services, where, again, if you want to register a transaction, you might not want to identify you all the time, but just prove some attributes about yourself. So there's, I guess, more applications than ever these days, and we were happy, actually, that in this group here that this is a topic that you guys want to standardize. Any kind of questions so far?
Yeah, this is Moses, and we're working on a blockchain for intellectual property in the form of innovation and patents and ideas. And your work is very interesting. However, what we were thinking of doing is doing a reverse selective disclosure in terms of search. So we call it a transactionalized search or partial transparency search. So it doesn't give you all the information unless it knows has a handshake or knows your reputation. So I'd like to talk to you about that offline.
I'll be happy to do so. Just because you probably have my email address, or you'll easily find it on Google. Just send me an email, and we'll try to find some things.
Okay, terrific.
So Jan has some slides. Once again, the URL is here. We're not using a slide advanced tool, so you may have to just tell us, go to the read the next slide or whatever. So why don't you begin with that? Thank you.
Right. So I guess maybe somewhat a disclaimer. I thought, Christopher, that in your email you mentioned like redactable signatures and a lot of crypto stuff. So the slides do not talk about crypto. They don't really have mathematical formulas on them. Essentially, because I wasn't quite sure to what kind of audience I'm talking, and sort of had some guesses, I guess. But I'll be happy to talk about the crypto algorithms themselves at some point.
I think this is appropriate at this point. We have a mixed audience. They are relatively technical, and there are some people that have some cryptographic knowledge, and we do want to dive into that. I think that your introduction will be good to kind of talk about it at a high level, because we do need to be talking about what are the possibilities and what are our recommendations at kind of that higher level, as well as actually specifying down to the bit level as we go along. So this is, I think, appropriate for today. Thank you.
Right. Okay. Very well. I mean. So these slides are slides that I gave a couple of years back at a summer school, essentially when the ABC for Trust project was finished, and so we presented the results of the project. Again, not any of the crypto, but rather the concepts. And so maybe a quick word about the ABC for Trust project. So essentially, before the project, people had the impression that there was Microsoft's UProof and there was IBM's IdentiMixer as two different kind of technologies to do anonymous credentials or attribute credentials or minimal disclosure, however people called them. There were like a lot of different terms for that and a lot of crypto. Maybe as a cryptographer you sort of could figure out what the differences here is, what the commonalities was. But in general, it was not very clear to people. And so really the goal of ABC for Trust was to sort of unify the different technologies under one hood and have like a common, if you want, like policy language or steering languages for those technologies. So that if some user wants to log in somewhere, it gets like a policy request and then can answer with minimal disclosure tokens to that request. Okay, so let me get to the slide. So, I mean, as I said, so this is really rather about the concepts, and maybe this might already be helpful to you guys in the sense that for naming different things. So as part of the project, of course, we had to find names for all the different concepts. And okay, so maybe I'm just now contributing to the plethora of different names here, but maybe it's also helpful to somehow maybe get rid of some names or have a better view of them. Right, I guess so. Let's go to slide number three. I'll leave some of the motivation here. But I guess so. The idea here is that we have a lot of crypto today that can help with privacy online. It's a number of algorithms here that they're all very similar. That they all share some things, but not all of them. I mean, at the end of the day, of course, they're all about minimal disclosure in some sense, because you want to solve some task without revealing too much information. So like oblivious transfer is there, on-in routing for the network layer, and so on. So there's, of course, different layers. And so I guess today we were just talking about the authentication parts here. And I guess one question, of course, we could ask, why is this not used today? But I think for this audience, I'll do this discussion, and we'll let me just jump to slide number seven. So slide number seven is like a basic scenario here. So it's because just in order to start, I'd like to discuss the scenario. So here's a user, let's say Alice, and Alice is over 18. Maybe she wants to do some like online gambling. and so on. And now there's a verified the online gaming site, and the site team says, okay, good, I don't trust you, anybody could walk up here, but I'm trusting this issuer here, and the issuer, of course, here, I mean, as you all know, it could be a wide set of different people. It could be a motor vehicle administration, it could be Facebook, it could be Google Plus, whoever issues attributes here, right? And so how could we solve that, or what are the different approaches how to do that today? And of course, there's a number of solutions that we could discuss, and essentially the broad categories of existing solutions are either they're require the issuer to be online, or that they can deal with the issuer not being online at the time you want to authenticate. So when you go to slide number 6, so essentially, so here, and I'm sorry, here with the PDF it doesn't quite work like that, but if this was a PowerPoint presentation, these overlay boxes would only appear later. So again, so your user Alice goes, asks for the request, and then it gets sent over, okay, please prove it that you're over 18. And note that this already is like in some sense an improvement of what people are doing today, because today typically they just say, okay, identify yourself, and then we're figuring out whether we're going to give you access. So here already we're sending over some what we call later presentation policy, telling the user, okay, so what facts, what claims does the user have to provide to the verifier, to the relying party here. And so now in the online solution, what happens is that the user goes to the issuer, just tells the issuer, okay, look, please, dear issuer, could you certify that I'm over 18, does some authentication there, maybe username, password, maybe some strong crypto, gets this certificate with just a single statement from the issuer and sends it over to the verifier. So from a privacy point of view, well, I guess the good thing is here the relying party just learns that statement, okay, I'm talking to a user who is over 18. Of course, they would have to do some authentication there as well, but that's typically taken care of. And on the positive side, but on the negative side, of course, the issuer now learns that at this moment in time, the user had to provide a proof that she's over 18 somewhere. Another drawback here is that for like security is that the issuer needs to be online 24/7, which depending for on the kind of credentials might not be what you want. Like for instance, like identity cards or passports, they would never be issued that way because it's just too hard to secure the keys of such a crucial fundamental credential on a server that is online 24/7. It's just like a contradiction there. So we want to have a possibility to have the issuer online, offline, sorry. So if you go to the next slide, and so here's the offline solution, slide number 9. So essentially here, what happens is we have the issuer, the user goes to the issuer, gets now a credential on her, like now here on a public key, so some kind of strong cryptographic token. And here all the attributes would be, so essentially this would be like an X5 or 9 attribute certificate, so all the attributes are in there. And so you do that, you can maybe go to your post office or to some physical thing, you know, in order to get this certificate, so you can have like a high security environment. And then later on, when you go and want to do the online gambling, again, it asks you whether you're over 18, but now, the only choice you're having here is to send over the whole certificate, the whole credential, reveal all the attributes to the relying party, and then, of course, prove that you're the holder of the public key that is in this certificate. So now from privacy, it's very bad because you reveal all the attributes, and the relying party might lose them or might not have the protection sufficient protection for them, because after at the end of the day, if this relying party is like a movie streaming service or a gambling website, again, they need to be highly available 24/7 again, so it's really hard to protect that. So, and just because we had to authenticate, we had to prove that we're over 18, we have to reveal so much information, so that's a very bad idea. And that's where sort of these attribute-based credentials come in, or what we call it on the next slide, the price ABCs. So in terms of price, we have a linkable transaction. We do have minimal information disclosure. We only need to disclose the information for the authentication task at hand, where we don't identify ourselves. And also from a security point of view, so the issuer can be offline. It doesn't have to have like a 24/7 facility running. And as I was saying initially, so the stuff that we had done here at IBM, Identity Mixer, UProof or Stefan Bruns did, what is now owned by Microsoft, is another solution. But actually, there's many other ways to do that. So I guess the code that we have online for the Identity Mixer is based on RSA. UProof is based on some discrete log things. But we also have elliptic curve versions of all of these algorithms. So under the hood, there's a number of cryptographic signature schemes and zero knowledge proofs that satisfy this. But again, as I said, today I'm not going to talk about these algorithms, but I'd rather like to look at the high level view. So what do all these algorithms have in common? Okay, so is there any questions about that? So probably this is also, mostly known to you guys. So,
it's largely known, but it's great to hear you talk about it because, you know, yes, this community has been trying to build stuff in this direction for 3-4 years, but it's also, you know, you've actually deployed some tests and demos and things of that nature, and use slightly different language, and this helps us kind of reconcile things and move forward.
Plus okay, one good. For that to give you another voice.
Thank you.
Yep, and I put myself on the queue to ask a couple of questions when we get there.
Would you like to ask now before we go to the rest of or after the presentation, Manon?
Yeah, I think right now, just to kind of help you on, point out things as he goes through the rest of this presentation. This is all really great stuff, and you're right. I mean, a number of us in this group are very familiar with a number of these concepts. We've looked at CL signatures in depth. We've read the papers. For the others in this group, this is also very helpful. So what I'm trying to say is that there's a tremendous amount of alignment with the work that you and your group have been doing and what we are trying to achieve with verifiable claims and the standard initiatives at the World Wide Web Consortium. I can't speak for anyone else in the group, but my hope is that we're able to work with you and your group to formalize these into specifications that are then pulled into the verifiable claims official working group work in time. So specifically, we currently do not have a capability of doing pseudonymous signatures or pseudonymous verifiable claims outside some of the experimental stuff that we've had. So the question is, how willing or ready your group is to kind of help this group put some of this technology standards track. And if you are, willing to do that, are there any patents that are covering this work or any blocks that you can see that would prevent us from taking the work that you've done and creating an international web standard around it?
Okay, so this were a bunch of questions. So I joined the call also to show our interest in this work.
Yeah.
And I guess we're happy to help, and of course there's a limit to everything. I mean, I guess we cannot spend the next 3 months full time on this because it's just we have limited resources, probably as everybody else. But I think on the other hand, we also have done a lot of work that can be helpful here, will be very helpful to help you access that work so that it can be used. But I think we have to see as we go here. I mean, to me now, it's not fully clear how much work this would really be, but what is really required. But I guess so far I'm happy to discuss and see where we can move this. And then, of course, at some point we have to discuss how many resources we have, how could we really do this work ourselves, or how much. Anybody is, how we distribute the work and all of that, right?
Well, thank you. Yeah, I mean, and we're certainly in the requirement stage and the investigation stage and such. So, as little or as much as, you or your team or people that you have been working with on these, and letting them know that we're getting to the point now where some very real standards are being prototyped and standard tracked to real-world deployment. We have people here from Educational Testing Services that do the SATs in the U.S. We have people from Pearson, lots of educational people in this community, lots of people from the blockchain community who are wanting to do different kinds of reputation systems and care deeply about privacy. So this is a community that can ship stuff. So, whatever level of support you can have. So we should move on and try to make sure we get at least through the slides.
Okay, sure. But I guess you also asked for the patent slides. I mean, there's, I guess, again, it depends at what level you're looking at those patents. Because at least from IBM, that there's no patents on the basic algorithms. But I know that other parties do have patents, but again, I'm not a lawyer, so and also I have an overview of what's out there, but I don't know every patent out there in the world either. Okay, so let's go to the slides then maybe. So maybe just like one step back, just towards the concept. So and I think. Also, when I remember when we started one of those projects the very first time, we started with a big discussion of what is an identity, and the people can get hooked up there. So that's why I added slide number 12 here, just to say, okay, so look, to me, an identity is something, well, very have a very technical view on that, and actually, I think that there is no such thing as a single identity. It's really we all have many different identities, and essentially, so in my rather technical view here, an identity consists of the attributes somebody stores about me. So at my workplace, my identity at the workplace would be all the attributes that IBM stores about me. Or that's the identity that I have with IBM. Of course, at workplace, I have colleagues. They have other attributes of me. But I guess so the idea is with every party I'm interacting with online, that they store some attributes about me, and sort of those attributes are really the identity I'm having with them. But I don't have like one single online identity because nobody ever knows all these attributes. That's the one thing. And then of course, now in order to be privacy protecting, I want to make sure that indeed I do not have like one big online identity, so that indeed not everybody knows everything about me. So I want to keep this sort of model as I'm used for in the real world. I don't tell everything to everybody, and in the real world we're sort of used very much in dealing with different identities. We'll manage them even very much intuitively. And I think so my vision was that online we can sort of do the same thing. Of course technology will help us, but really we do have different identities with different parties. So which brings me to slide number 12. So right, so an identity is really a set of attributes that somebody has with me. Of means that that's the identity having with that party. Of course, that identity is not static. It is dynamic, whatever they learn about me and so on. And now, of course, as a user-side identity management, of course, many companies talk also about identity management when they mean something completely different, because for a company, typically identity management means that they want to make sure that whenever I talk to them that they realize it's me, and that they sort of have a single identity for a user. But I'm, on the other hand, as a user, I might even actually want to have different identities with the same company. So it might be two different and somewhat conflicting views. So here, for my sake, I'm talking about user-centric identity management. So it's a user. I have as many identity with other people as I want. Essentially, maybe even for every transaction, a different identity. And now, in order, of course, to make this identity management useful, I have to have means to first of all, authenticate or re-authenticate with this identity. So that means I need to have some mechanism. This could be a strong cryptographic identity identification mechanism proving I know discrete log of some public key. It could also be just username and password, where the username is just a random pseudonym username and the password. But of course, preferably something strongly cryptographic. So that's one thing I need to have. And the other thing is really I need to be able to transport attributes from one party to another. So if I'm going to the example from before, my driver's license organization, or my motor vehicle administration, or my government, they know my birth date. So they now, if I want to prove somewhere that I'm over 18, I sort of want to transport this attribute, okay, I'm over 18 from the government to that website, without making those two identities linkable. And so I think it's really about how can we implement those two mechanisms without making everything linkable. Okay, so I think that's sufficient for that. Also, we are sort of limited in time here. So let's go then to the next slide, slide number 14. And so I've already started a little bit about going in towards this concept. But I guess the first sort of identity management or attribute-based credential concept is the first one we've seen. An identity is really a set of attributes. So whenever I talk to a pseudonym or like a pseudonymous identity, it's a set of attributes. Then it comes with authentication means. So that is what we had. The pseudonym, I have to have some kind of pseudonym with that party, and also something what we call key binding. I want to make sure that the pseudonym or this public key that I attach to the identity can be bound to cryptographic secrets. So that's sometimes that's not the case. So for instance, when we would do something like a movie ticket, if I buy a movie ticket, I could just say, because this is like a one-time thing, I could share it with my friends. So it doesn't have to be bound to my secret key. Could something that I could buy, and then later on anybody can use that anonymously, just as long as it can only be used once, it's fine. So we don't even have to have this key binding property all the time. But it's a concept that we said, okay, some credentials could be key bound, or it could not be key bound. Okay, so then I was already talking about credentials. So a credential in our view here is just like a set of attributes that got issued to a user by some issuing party. So a credential essentially is like a set of verified attributes or attested attributes. And now again, a credential can be key bound. So then it means that the credential is also bound to the secret key, but it can also be not key bound. Then it just contains these attributes. Essentially, if it's not key bound, it also means that I can share it with other people, and it doesn't have sense that if somebody uses credential and it has a birth date in it, you cannot be sure that the person who presents that credential is really the one that for which this birth date or which this age statement holds. So it's more like a bank note, if you want, in some sense. I guess the other concept was the presentation token. So the presentation token is something when I present my credential, actually I'm not sending this credential, but rather I'm sending a presentation token, which could be derived from the credential. And of course, the equivalent to the presentation token is the presentation policy, which says, okay, please prove to me that I'm over 18. So that would be the presentation policy. And then if I derive from my credential a presentation token that just proves that I'm over 18, so that's the two, how the two relate. So that's the overview, but let me go to slide number 15 that sort of explains those concepts, again, so maybe just to reiterate there. Okay, so key binding really means that every user has a secret key, and the secret key is sort of, in some sense, the secret identity of the user. And from this secret identity that the user can derive, and already on slide number 16 there, so the user can derive a pseudonym. So the user can derive as many pseudonyms as she wants from there, and so that the pseudonyms would really be the cryptographic handles for the different identities that the user would have with the different parties. And now going to slide number 16, actually in ABC for Trust, we defined two kinds of pseudonyms. So regular pseudonyms and scope exclusive pseudonyms, or sometimes they also were called domain pseudonyms. But at the end of the day, we decided to call them scope exclusives. So the idea here is that for a regular pseudonym, I can have my secret key and I just derive a fresh pseudonym for my secret key. And there you go. So if you have different pseudonyms from the same secret key, you cannot tell that these pseudonyms are from the same person or whether they are from different persons. So they're completely unlinkable. Now, sometimes, however, it might be useful that actually there is some linkability. So let's say if we have something like a vote going on or like the polling that the students would do about the course, actually we want to make sure that like one person can only come here and do that once, because if they come again and again and again and present a new pseudonym, then we might not be happy because the same person could just throw over the vote. So in this case, actually, we want to sort of define some kind of scope, say, okay, so the scope here is the evaluation of the lecture, and now then we have another mechanism to derive the pseudonyms from a user secret key, such that if I derive a pseudonym from my secret key for the same scope, it will always end up with the same pseudonym. And of course, if I derive a pseudonym for another scope, then these two pseudonyms for the different scopes are still unlinkable, so they share the property with the regular pseudonyms like that. But as soon as I do it for the same scope, I cannot come up with different pseudonyms. So that's why they are called scope exclusive. For one scope, only one pseudonym for one user. And right, so I guess so. Also in ABC for Trust, we did XML specification of all of that. So the scope would be a binary string. The exclusive would just say, okay, so is the bit set? Is it exclusive or not? And then the pseudonym value would then be the cryptographic value. So that's how we defined a pseudonym. So it's very generic, and then of course if you match that down to XML, it would be looking something like at the very bottom of page number 17 here. Okay, but so that's already like our first definition of the concept. So we now have defined what a pseudonym is. And now, any questions so far? Okay, then let me move on. So to the next concept, the credentials. So I guess we've already sort of seen what it is. You send one of your pseudonyms to the issuer, and now the issuer can issue a credential on the pseudonym. Actually, if the credential is key-bound, then it will be issued on the pseudonym. If the credential is not key-bound, then it will not be issued to the pseudonym. It will just be like a set of attributes. And so if you go to the next slide, slide number 17, sorry, slide number 19, so here's how we specify the credentials. So the credential specification, so that specifies essentially what a credential is. So it has a specification ID, so that's a unique number, so that every credential, so that's in some sense a template for what a credential is. It's like how would a passport look like. So you define a format for a credential. And so each specification has a unique number. You would define how many attributes you're going to issue in this credential. Then you would define what are the types of attributes, so how many attributes could be. So for each attribute, you would define, the type would be something like first name or last name and so on. Then, of course, then it depends what kind of data type do you have. Is this a string? Is it an integer? Is it Boolean? And so on. That's done. And sometimes we have to have an encoding. So sometimes if it's an integer, then of course there's a one-to-one encoding. It's easy. But sometimes if it's a string, if you want to encode, I don't know, address, a very long thing that doesn't really fit in the credential, so then maybe you have to hash it first before you can issue a credential with that. And so that, like SHA-256 would be the encoding, a possible encoding, but we have defined a whole list of different encodings, how you could encode attributes into what gets at the end signed by credential. Then the key binding says, okay, so is this credential bound to a pseudonym? Is it bound to on the via in sort of in translation of the, if it's bound to the user pseudonym, then it's bound to the key that is underlying the pseudonym. So it's really, you don't, in some sense, you don't, while you issue credentials to the pseudonym, you really issue them to the secret key that underlies the pseudonym. So it makes sure that they're all really to the user's, in some sense, secret identity. So that if key binding is true, there are also revocations. Some credentials are revocable. Some credentials are not revocable, or rather, whether they support revocation or not. And if they support revocation, and then you would also have to point to like a revocation authority who manages the revocation list of this credential. And by the way, there's a number of mechanisms that we have implemented for revocation. And now if you issue a credential, actually, then you take this credential template and sort of fill it in. So you would, for each of the attributes, you would also add like the value of that attribute. So what was my first name? So you would add Jan in there in the encoded in the way that is specified. And of course, then you would add like a crypto value, a crypto blob. In some sense, in X509, that would be the X509 signature that you would encode and add to the X509 certificate. And same thing here. I mean, of course, you have to define also the algorithm that this value does, but that's really like inside the value. So from the XML kind of specification here, this would just be any value that ends up. And right, so if you go to page number 20, here you see like the way we specified that in XML for some of the some of our use cases. So you can see the specification UID is just a URL. Just to make sure that this is a unique string, and then you define all these things: first name, last name, and so on. And I guess you can also see how UProof or Microsoft defined verifiable claims. It's somewhat related to that. Okay, so does that make sense so far?
Absolutely, although we're somewhat time constrained, so...
I realize that. Right, so I guess I'll try to move on here. So now we have the credential specification. Now, let's see here. The issue is offline. The user has two credentials on the different pseudonyms. So we're on slide number 21. So the user might have like a driver's license and an insurance policy or like a subscription and an identity card under two different identities. And now the user wants to present those to a verifier. Of course, now without sending those things over, so we want to have minimal disclosure. So now the verifier says, okay, if you wanna do online gambling, you have to prove to me that you have a valid subscription, that you're older than 18. And so this statement, that's what we call presentation policy. And the next slide number 22, this is defined. So presentation policy essentially is a collection, a list of the following things. So it is a list of credentials that you would... would you accept? So this again is a credential alias, which could be okay. I want to have a driver's license, and then you specify which possible credential specification adhere to that. So that's a link to what we had URIs of the credential specs that we had before. So I know because I accept driver's license, I accept passports, and so on. Then we have issuers. So who are possible issuers? A statement, or rather, which possible issuers would I trust for those statements? There's a few other things here, which is inspection grounds. I guess I'll skip them for now. And then again, so we have key binding. So if you say, okay, so all these credentials I want to have key binding, so that means all the credentials here that I accept or that I want to see from you, they all need to be bound. They all need to have the same key. So I want to say that your driver's license and your insurance policy or your membership certificate, they should all be bound to the same user. Okay, but so far it just says which credentials I want you to present, but it doesn't reveal any attribute yet. It's just this ownership of those credentials. Now the next section here with the attribute predicates, so now you define which attributes you want to see. Maybe you want to see the first name, but maybe you just want to make sure that the first name in my driver's license is the same as the first name in my subscription certificate. So you can define all kinds of attributes, all kinds of predicates that the attributes need to satisfy. So you can either reveal them, or you can just say that they need to be equal, or your birth date needs to be lying further in past than 18 years. And finally, there's also a string here that you want to sign, so maybe that's like a context string that can be used. It could be the data handling policy that you could encode in here. Page number 23 sort of shows an example of how we would encode that. And now actually when you then provide the presentation.
Thanks for using WebEx. Visit our website at www.webex.com.
Can somebody mute their phone? We're getting some.
Check.
Okay, that's so bizarre. I guess we're running out of time here. Well, I guess essentially,
yeah,
so what happens
are.
Now, if you, sorry? Yes, so we'll just postpone to the next time, or should we?
Just take a couple of minutes. I mean, the summary slide is 31, where you also talk about pseudonymous, random and scope exclusive, revocation, and inspection. So, I would like to have you back, and maybe we can talk a little bit more about the crypto here, but let me just give you a little context. So in the way I'm sorry, I'm doing some desk noises that's making it hard to speak or hear. Does somebody mute? Okay. So, the Verifiable Claims community started in 2014. And has been working in, sort of similar directions. What you call a credential, we are calling verified claims. Rather than using X.509 certificates, we are using something called linked data. Linked data has the advantage of being able to be signed in a variety of ways and supporting multiple ways of doing that. We are have made good progress with that. Very specifically, in order to be able to do an international standard with the authority of the W3C, a working group needed to be formed. It was formed about 2 months ago. It was a long process, so it has the legal authority to do so. But it was also had a limitation that it was supposed to be more about the data formats rather than the cryptography and the think about it as being, the equivalent of X.509, except we can't specify what the signature looks like in at least this
right.
pass. So this community, the larger community, which doesn't necessarily have authority to be able to do an actual international standard, does have the authority to do reports and recommendations and things of that nature. Get things to the point where we can either submit it to the working group to have them, add it to their charter, or less ideally form a separate working group. So that's kind of the state we're at. What's really interesting is that partly because of the blockchain community, we have some interesting crypto has been creeping in. Also some interesting things called decentralized identifiers, which deal with some of your pseudonymous, basically it's a pseudonymous trust anchor that somebody can strongly share their keys. So in the case of the Bitcoin example, which is one of many, you know, I'm basically using the strength of the Bitcoin blockchain to be my key server, be my validator and timestamper of my base credential for a pseudonymous identifier that then Verified Claims can use to make pseudonym, you know, make Web of Trust to very sophisticated claims about. So very much attribute-based, et cetera. So we're making all good technical progress on all of these things. Where, you know, where we would love to have more, you know, advice from your team. I think we're dealing with some nomenclature and naming and process issues, and the fact that you've gone through this exercise once before. There's some, you know, differences in our language that, you know, we're going to be resolving, or in the process of resolving. And then there's, you know, actually getting to the variance in crypto. Like, what are the you know, if I talk about purely data minimization, you know, with redaction, then there's the uProof, the, you know, the identity mixer, other approaches, you know, which offer what, or even just ZK SNARKs. And, you know, my company does confidential transactions with, you know, range proofs and such. So, you know, which are appropriate for, you know, different user needs. I think you, your team, or people you know that, you know, want to see this stuff deployed, can give us some advice on. So I'm thinking that we can't schedule it for our next meeting, which is 2 weeks from now, but I would love to have you in maybe latter part of July dive a little bit deeper into, you know, some of the crypto possibilities here. And maybe we'll, I think some of the things that were interesting about your work also that we haven't spent enough time is on revocation of credentials. I think that's another area. Right. So we're technically so out of time, go ahead and I'm going to let a couple of people speak before we close.
So I guess so. Revocation is another whole bunch of can of worms that will take a lot of time to really talk about. Happy to do that. Same for the crypto algorithm. So, what you're saying now is some of what I've been talking about now has really been. I mean, some of that has been standardized already, and it is the other working group. And you guys are rather interested in sort of the cryptographic possibilities to realize those kind of concepts.
Yeah. Manu, maybe you can also say a little bit. You're good at quickly summarizing and paraphrasing the connections.
This is all great stuff. I know that Evernym has a very strong interest in this space. You know, DigiBazaar has a strong interest in this space. I think it would be very healthy for the verifiable claims work to have more experts in the space like Jan and his team. To kind of circle back around to, you know, my question to Jan, which was, you know, what portions of this can we standardize? To be very specific, I think what we would like to see is not, you know, Jan's team take on the entire brunt of the work, but rather advise us on the best mode of implementation. So, you know, we've got people here that can write specs. We have a fairly decent understanding of what goes into these things, but we need to boil it down into a standard and have multiple implementations. And it's there that we really need the most amount of help. I don't think it's, you know, 3 months of constant work over the next couple of months. I think it's, you know, sending questions to Jan and his team as we go through writing the specification to get clarification in the area, in the areas, in specific, you know, specifically around the crypto and the way we effectively pack bits into a data structure and use those things. My hope is that, you know, Jan and his team continue to be involved with the group as we try to do that.
Sure.
Yeah, that's a good summary.
That makes sense.
So,
I guess I'm still trying to find my way. Okay, I guess I'm a bit confused. What is now in the verifiable claims standardization group, or what has been done out there already, and what are sort of the algorithms and how these things are connected? Sort of what is missing from the claim specification, and what is missing from the crypto part?
So that's a very long discussion. In that, we need to make sure we're using the right terminology to communicate and all of that stuff. So we have a very specific set of things that we would like to discuss with you and your team. Hopefully, we can have it as a community discussion where, you know, we have as many people as we do on the phone today involved in that discussion. But I think we may need to take some of that discussion offline, the W3C process questions offline, like how would this work proceed? So that's process political discussion. And then the other set of discussions we need to have are highly technical in nature. It's the cryptography that we have, how it fits into the architecture that we've built. We have built the architecture with CL signatures in mind. We just need to make sure that everything fits together and works properly. So there's another track of discussions that are technical discussions. It is going to take, you know, it's going to take several months to get through the discussion, not highly concentrated months, but, you know, months where several weeks go by where we try something, you know, it does or doesn't work, and we ask for a refinement from your team, and we just go back and forth until we get something that all of us are happy with.
I mean, okay. I'll say from my vantage point, there are sort of three critical areas. I think the one of which is that, you know, we have a credentials format, we have a variety of ways of signing them, et cetera. I think we have not looked at some of the edge cases, and we're basically the same exact model as you. You know, the offline model, you know, all of that is exactly parallel to the work that you've done. I don't know that we've done sufficient work on the complexities of revocation. I mean, there's been discussion about things like, you know, one of the schools that I taught at is no longer around. So is the fact that, you know, my students graduated from there, the fact that they can, you know, prove that they graduated, but there's no identity provider or no credentials provider to confirm that anymore. So when do things expire? When do things get revoked? How you revoke them? There are a lot of weird edge cases there that maybe you have some help on. Obviously, we have one group that's doing CL signatures. We'd like to make sure that, you know, we're doing it to the latest spots there. That group is largely doing it around elliptic curves. We want to make sure we're doing it off the right limitations, elliptic curves, as opposed to discrete log for that. And obviously, we want to steer around any patent issues or known security issues that you may be more aware of than we are. And then just in general, I mean, we've got a requirements document. We need to specify what some of these things are a little bit more clearly. We have non-cryptographic members of the community. I already see a couple of things from your slides where I'm going, oh, I need a slide like that, but with our latest terminology, because it does a little bit better than some of our slides do. So, you know, any help in that area. That's all advisory, unless you've got some grad student who wants to dive in. There's some real opportunities here, if there is. But, you know, just letting people know that, you know, we are doing this. It is not purely academic. It's beginning to move into business and into the standards community. So, you know, all moving forward.
Okay, sounds very good. So I guess then I'm just in some sense leaving it to you to guide me here and to tell me what you need, and then we can see to what extent we're able to do that.
Yeah. So I would suggest we published your email address, and some of your contact information is also in this slide. You're welcome to come to our next meeting on the 11th if you're interested, although we're mainly going to be talking about kind of finalizing our do we want to change the name of the group? We can't, this is the time to do it if we're going to do it. And say, now that we've spawned the verified claims group, we have that opportunity and finalize our mission statement, which is going to include that one of our requirements is that we're going to be doing some stuff in this area. Choose our highest priority work items, which in, so far the votes are high on this report that we want to do. And so that's, we're going to be talking about that in our next meeting in 2 weeks, but maybe in 3 or 4 weeks we have you talk very specifically about CL signatures and their limitations or strengths, deployments that you've seen, anything, sort of adjacent that we ought to be looking at. Obviously we know about you proof. Maybe there's some that we should be striking and basically going, things, this particular one, which was talked about 3 years ago, is no longer that viable or whatever. So
a little more crypto-oriented
one would be great. Right. And then, maybe in August we can talk about revocation. That's it.
Right. And I guess it will be a bit of a way of sort of finding what level of you need from me and all of that, like the natural process. But I'm happy to do that and then take it from there.
Okay. Well, thank you very, very much for joining us today, and thanks for everybody who hanged around for the extra 15 minutes of the meeting. We have slides. Jan has some links, including some code that was sent to the list. Next meeting is the 11th. So thank you much again, everybody, and I call this meeting adjourned.
Thanks all. Bye.